CH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston, and now the federal government has reached day 23 of the federal government shutdown. ABC's Perry Russum in Washington.
With no progress in negotiations on Capitol Hill, Democratic Senator John Fetterman is breaking with his party in hopes of reopening the government. He says Republicans should invoke what's called the nuclear option. It would allow the government spending bill to pass the Senate by simple majority instead of a 60-vote threshold, warning federal food assistance or SNAP benefits are about to run out for 42 million Americans.
The destruction of the White House continues. Sources tell ABC News the demolition of the entire East Wing could be complete by this weekend. President Trump now also upping the cost of his new ballroom. It's gone from $200 million to $300 million, which he says will be paid for by private donors. While defending airstrikes on vessels off the coast of Venezuela, Secretary of State Marco Rubio is now headed to Israel to discuss the ceasefire in Gaza. This is ABC News.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 96.9 WBZH.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Captain Olivia Benson of the NYPD's SVU, also known as Mariska Hargitay, really had her sights set on comedy early in her career. During a recent appearance on Amy Poehler's podcast, Hargitay said she screen tested several times for Friends, specifically the role of Monica. She was on Seinfeld and The Single Guy as well, and thought that sitcoms were her destiny until a psychic told her doing comedy would never make her famous. 6 months later, she got the role of Benson on the Dick Wolf series. The show has been on now for 26 seasons. Anybody know the number of a good psychic? Actress Elizabeth Olsen says she will no longer act in studio-financed films unless they get a theatrical release. The veteran of many indie films says she is fine acting in films that have no distribution, but says being a part of a big production just to go to streaming does not excite her. The Godzilla actress emphasized that the theater-going experience is very important and much like a sporting event in that it brings people together. Testify. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Will Watson return? Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NFL. Packers wide receiver Christian Watson has been rehabbing after suffering a torn ACL at the end of last season. Will this be the week Watson returns?
My goal and my plan is to play this week. I'd say I could have played last week too, to be honest, but you know, obviously just got to make sure, you know, I'm hearing, you know, everybody's opinions on everything and just being as smart as possible about it.
The Packers play the Steelers in Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football. NBA, the Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo scored 37 points, the most in his career on an opening night, in a 133-120 victory over the Washington Wizards, but guard Kevin Porter Jr. undergoing an MRI for a severely sprained left ankle. How is he doing early in the game?
Just his defensive pressure, couple steals, deflections, and then just his half-court defense, him and our whole group, led to us a ton of runouts. It might have been the most advanced passes we've had.
That's the Bucks head coach Doc Rivers with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Don't act like that. Don't wear that. Don't think that. I've heard everything you tell yourself every time you felt different. And I want you to know that you can be vulnerable and powerful. That taking care of your mind is taking care of everyone you love and who loves you. Love your mind. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
Hey everybody, the midterm elections might be a year away, but there is a sleeper issue out there that may be the key to Democrats winning. We'll discuss it next time. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to 96.9 WBZH, Hayward's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
It is going to be mostly cloudy today with a shower or two possible. Our high right around 44 this afternoon. The wind will be northwest at 5 to 10. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy. We're going to drop into the mid-20s for a low. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 50. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 35.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Paul Jaconi Berry and Sean Hannish back with another great Wisconsin sports film. No Packers, no life.
Sean came across No Packers, No Life at the Wisconsin Film Festival and said, you got to see it. We got to see if we can do something. This movie is just such a great opportunity to really see the impact of Wisconsin culture halfway around the world in Japan. It is just so magical and joyful. Yeah. So I encourage everybody to come take a look.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Thursday, we'll talk to Sean O'Malley about your money and the markets and how the State of Wisconsin Investment Board made a killing off of crypto, then wisely got out.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Well, word is that the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Farm Service Agency offices are going to reopen effective today. Yeah, that's despite the government still being shut down. Welcome in on a Thursday morning. I am the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. This is the Midwest Farm Report. That's the information we received yesterday from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. $3 billion in farm aid that the FSA offices are supposed to start distributing today. We're on top of it. We're in connection with the state offices trying to get you the many details I'm sure you've got on your mind this morning. If your mind is on weather, let me tell you, today I am pleased to report sunshine back in the forecast. Now we've got to get through the frost this morning, otherwise sunshine on the way today. A little warmer too, highs near 50 degrees. Winds not quite as tenacious today, out of the northwest, 5 to 15 miles an hour. More frost again coming back in overnight. Friday, after we move through the frost, another sunny day. 53. Saturday looks like sunny day and 57. Sunday, partly sunny, highs near 60 degrees. So it looks like improving weather for some of the folks that still have chores to get done out there. In fact, our Wisconsin potato producers are still moving through the harvest. And when you get temperatures overnight that cause frost, that turns into a quality issue for the spuds that remain in the ground. Stephanie Hoff has that story for us as we're rolling this morning. And we're finding out what Wisconsin beef producers think about the potential for Argentinian beef entering into the U.S. marketplace. A new consumer poll shows U.S. consumers are buying beef right now at the prices they're at, which confounds Brady Zook, one of the Wisconsin beef producers up in Ladysmith that's trying to figure out its next move. That plus Cody Koster, dairy analyst with EverAg, all on the way for a Monday. Next, we introduced you to another one of the four finalists for the Leopold Conservation Award. I head down to Lafayette County to visit with Mike Berg about this special honor and how important it is to not only his farm, but his family. That story next.
At Channel, we always show up for our farmers.
Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick, how did you...
Dropping in to check on your crop, Bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy.
From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed Pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
We know Wisconsin cheese is the best, and the United States knows that Wisconsin is America's Dairyland. But what about beyond our borders? On this month's Check-In with Dairy Checkoff, Waterloo dairy farmer Mark Crave says Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin has expanded dairy's reach to 50 countries. Those are vital markets for Wisconsin dairy farmers.
Only 4% of the world's population lives in the United States. And so what that leaves is basically the rest of the world who are potential customers, who have food needs, they have needs for the nutrition of our dairy products. And obviously what we do here is we can produce a lot of milk and a lot of cheese and a lot of other dairy products. We can't consume all those. 90% of our milk in Wisconsin is converted into cheese, and 90% of that cheese leaves the state.
Wisconsin's dairy pride doesn't stop at our state line. It's recognized around the world thanks to the work of farmers like Mark Crave and Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. Learn more about that global reach at wisconsindairy.org.
Next on our Corn Hall of Fame tour, Pioneer brand Power Core and List Corn.
Ooh, look at all the trophies.
Yes. Power Core and List beats competitors with a 7.7 bushel per acre yield advantage. Three distinct modes of pest control action and unsurpassed herbicide flexibility mean above ground pests and weeds can't win.
But what if they try?
They wouldn't dare. Plant the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/powerup.
Living by example. That may be one phrase you use to describe today's Leopold Conservation finalist. I'm PM Yonke from the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, where today I take you to Lafayette County and introduce you to Leopold Conservation finalist Mike Berg in Blanchardville. Berg's family has practiced no-till and grown crops on contour strips since the 1970s. They have installed terraces, nearly a mile of stream bank riprap, all to keep soil in place after battling the Pecatonica River. Mike Berg took time out to explain to me their motivation behind protecting that soil and the legacy that he hopes his practices will continue with the next generation.
I've spent my whole life here. This is a very pretty farm. It's the heart of the Driftless area, so no glaciers went over this place. So we have hills and valleys and the Pecatonica River, and we love it here.
How many acres? Tell me about the farm.
540 acres is what our farm is, roughly 325 tillable. The rest is pasture and woods.
Now, you're a finalist for the Leopold Conservation Award. How did you get to that level?
Well, years ago, Pam, I was traveling along the Pecatonica River, and I watched a massive landslide of dirt and sediment just fall into the river. And I thought to myself, there's got to be something that can be done to stop this dirt, the sediment pollution into the Pecatonica that will hurt fishing and just wind up in the Gulf of Mexico. And I called over to NRCS, and NRCS said, we'll send somebody over, we'll look at it. And that's how this started.
Take me from the beginning. What projects suddenly stuck out in your mind on your own farm that you wanted to address?
Well, right behind you, right as I'm looking at, we have had a waterway that was done before the stream bank improvement that needed rebuilding because we're draining like 120 acres from above us here. And so that was addressed. Also, I had what my dad had put in back in the 60s was called diversions. But now they don't, I was told from NRCS, they don't call them diversions anymore. They're called terraces. So we redid the diversions into terraces and improved their water capability. And was a couple of the things. Also, pasture rotation, as the gentleman from NRCS was out here, he said, are you rotating your pastures? I'm like, yeah, I rotate them. I turn them out in the spring and I take them off in the fall. He goes, no, rotate them by every couple of weeks. So for the last 5 years, we've been rotating pastures. And the end result there is I get a lot bigger calves in the fall because cattle are doing better.
Really? And
yes.
How about their health, herd health?
Oh, very, very good. And the other thing from a conservation standpoint is the grass will hold more water when it rains heavy if it's taller than if it's chewed down next to the ground. So we found that to be very beneficial.
Tell me about some of the challenges of being in the Driftless area. I drove into your farm, and that's a long, hilly, very narrow pathway. Tell me about the types of soils when you really started looking closely at the ground you run, the challenges that you were overcoming.
Well, we have some Tama soils around the farm, but not like a Belmont or Platteville or Schulzburg area has with the really deep soils in Lafayette County. We have a lot of flint rocks. We have a lot of shale. We have a lot of sand rocks. We have literally on our hills, we have maybe 6 inches of good dirt, and then the rest is rocks. I mean, in a lot of places. Now, where we're standing right now on this bottom ground, yes, I've got good black dirt here. But we talk about challenges. We have the Pecatonica River that goes through our farm, and we get all the rain from Mount Horb to Dodgeville and south of Military Ridge. And when it rains 5 or 6 inches, look out. Get your boat hooked up because it's going to be bad.
Tell me the story of what you've had to overcome with that being a part of your farm, because there, like you said, there's some years everybody hears, well, the Pecatonica is over the banks. That means something to you very specific.
Oh, yeah, with our cows, as you can hear in the background, through the years when we've had them 6 and 7 or 8 inch rains, the cows would cross the Pecatonica and then they'd realize their calf is in the other side. So they'd go back, and these cows are very attentive to their little ones. So when they'd cross back to come home, they'd keep the calf above them and to get that little calf home. And that's that used to happen a lot. Now, right now, our cattle can't access the Pecatonica River. We changed things around. So that was back in the past. But
now, this year has been unique, though, from talking about flooding to pretty dry. How has that changed up your plans, if at all?
We had, I would have to say, an excellent growing season this year. I mean, excellent. We had our corn in on April 15th. We harvested it last week at like 15% moisture. Just amazing growing season. And then the last month has been this really dry. And I can only think, if we'd have had this dryness back in June or July, we wouldn't be talking about bountiful crops. So we're just plain lucky.
Now, your practices, have you seen changes, Mike, from when you first started to the gradual changes and programs and, like you said, terraces that you put in? Help people understand, you make a long-term commitment to these practices. You've got to stick with it regardless of weather.
My dad first started doing no-till corn planting back in the 70s, and I wasn't really a big fan of it, but let's try this. And every year it kept getting a little bit better. So we've tried to do more no-till on the hills. We still till up our bottoms, because in the bottoms you have colder soil and you need to get it warmed up. So we've done that. And we planted a lot of walnut trees, a lot of pine trees, Norway pine, white pines, spruce, and which have made, on the marginal lands, which have made excellent deer habitat. And I've got lots of a son and some grandsons and son-in-laws that like to hunt. So this is a mega place to hunt. And the other thing is, one of the things my dad taught me was that we really don't own this farm. We're just caring for it for the next generation. And that is so true. And when you have ground like these hills that are so susceptible to erosion, it is just, you have to take care of this land. And there was an old saying that my dad had, if you take care of the ground will take care of you.
That's a farmer's faith right there. Mike Berg from Blanchardville in Lafayette County, one of the four finalists for this year's Leopold Conservation Award. They'll be making the announcement of the ultimate winner mid-November at the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection's annual board meeting, and then recognizing that winner again during the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation's annual meeting in Wisconsin Dells the first weekend of December. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as ag meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A lawyer who had multiple phone calls with President Donald Trump during the January 6th insurrection has been appointed by the president to investigate debunked allegations that widespread fraud changed the outcome of the 2020 election. He has 130 days as a special government employee to complete his assignment. The Wall Street Journal reported October 17th that Kurt Olson, a product liability attorney turned Trump election lawyer, was appointed to look into President Trump's claims that the 2020 election was stolen. According to the January 6th Select Committee report, it was Olson who drafted a memo on January 2nd entitled "The Role of the Vice President in Receiving Votes from the Electoral College," and he spoke with Trump three times on January 6th. The Detroit News reports that Olson has recently been involved in defending another Trump election lawyer, Stephanie Lambert, from accusations she and others tampered with Michigan electronic vote tabulators. He defended U.S. Senate and Arizona gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake in her baseless challenges to the 2022 election. A judge sanctioned Olson for, quote, false, misleading, and unsupported factual assertions, though his fines were later dropped. Two good government groups later filed ethics complaints in Maryland and Washington, D.C. for an alleged, quote, pattern of unethical conduct. We've linked to more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
They were it. That's the ballgame.
Adrian Klenz is executive director of the Center for Deafblind Persons. Those cuts, those programs would be rolled into something else. Is there a group deafblind children could be folded into?
There is no other program. Those seven individuals have the specialized training to help those with dual sensory loss. There's no one else in the state of Wisconsin that has that training.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I'm joined by UW-Madison Professor of Military History, John Hall. We dig into what is going on in the current moment and its historical echoes of our past.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Maybe a little taste of that before we get cold again, huh?
Yeah, that sun should break through, Pam. After all, low pressure's pulling away, high pressure trying to strengthen in. But cold and frostiness, that's what we have to talk about. There's a frost advisory in western Wisconsin this morning, and then late tonight into tomorrow morning. A good chunk of Wisconsin where we really haven't frozen yet, the growing season's still running. I mean, I'm looking La Crosse to Mauston, Juneau, Adams County, and over into the Fox Valley, Winnebago, Outagamie, and Brown County, and then back up just south of Eau Claire. That's where that freeze warning kicks in tonight. Eastern and western and central and then southern Wisconsin under that freeze warning, 2 a.m. to 9 a.m. on Friday. And temperatures are going to drop down the low 30s and upper 20s. If we hit that 28-degree mark for at least 2 hours, it's considered a killing freeze. That probably is going to be something we'll deal with many locations into the early morning hours of tomorrow. There still could be some frost and freezing even into Saturday morning. Not much else going to be a big weather maker here. I expect just to start the weekend that western Wisconsin may have a small chance of a sprinkle, and that would be into Saturday. For most of us, though, we're not going to see it. We are going to start to dry out. Sunshine becoming a little more of a part of our day, a little better today. Certainly more of that sun then for Friday, Saturday, and into Sunday. And those temperatures will moderate in spite of the fact we're talking about frost and possibly some freezing. Even though we get that cool in the night and early morning, the daytime highs will respond, heading back to normal and even above into Saturday and Sunday. There could be a 60 in southern Wisconsin come Sunday. There may be a small rain chance wrapping up the weekend. Sunday night or just into Monday, I don't expect a lot of rain, you know, like the hundredth of an inch or two we've seen the last couple of days. That chance may be redeveloping as we wrap up the weekend or start into next week. But the temperatures should stay a little nicer in the upper 50s, even getting next week underway. I'll have those forecast details right after this.
The channel we always show up for our farmers.
Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick, how did you...
Dropping in to check on your crop, Bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy.
From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Get ready, Wisconsin. 10 days packed with discovery, fun, and excitement are coming your way. It's the Wisconsin Science Festival, October 16th through the 26th. With over 200 unique events in more than 50 counties, you'll find something for everyone, kids, families, and lifelong learners. This year's theme, rock and roll. Dive into the music, motion, and geology with interactive events. Don't miss the fun. Visit wiscifest.org to find events near you.
Next on our Corn Hall of Fame tour, Pioneer brand Power Core and List Corn.
Ooh, look at all the trophies.
Yes, Power Core and List beats competitors with a 7.7 bushel per acre yield advantage. Three distinct modes of pest control action and unsurpassed herbicide flexibility mean above ground pests and weeds can't win.
But what if they try?
They wouldn't dare. Plant the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/powerup.
All right, give me that forecast, Stu.
All right, well, we have to talk about that frost advisory this morning in the west. And otherwise today, I do expect some sunshine to break through. Clouds may be a little stubborn in the northwest, but it should be a little brighter throughout the day. And I'd expect upper 40s, very low 50s. The south could just break 50 with that northwest wind 5 to 15. It's the freeze warning tonight. Of course, some frost late in the night. Clear skies down to 30 and into the upper 20s with the northwest winds only about 5 to 10. A frosty start, but then more of a sunny day Friday. And here's where we hit the very upper 40s and low 50s with the northwest breeze. Could be some frost again Saturday morning, Pam, back to sunny skies. And in fact, low and probably upper 50s in southern Wisconsin, south winds 5 to 10. You may have that 60 come Sunday.
All right, I'll take that. Talk text lines open, 877-301-FARM, 877-301-3276.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matinee on Air.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent episode of Matinee on Air, where Civic Media News Director Shelly Pittman joins.
Earlier, we were talking about possible funding cuts to the Wisconsin library system due to the big bill for billionaires. And Shelly, you wanted to take a moment to talk about the libraries.
The IMLS, the Institute for Museum and Library Science, is another one of those agencies that doesn't get a lot of attention until it's on the chopping block. So the IMLS program funds sort of new, sometimes experimental programs for libraries to use. The IMLS also funds the statewide interlibrary loan program. So this is how rural libraries are most likely to be affected, is because this is what makes your interlibrary loan possible. This is what allows you to get, but you know, if you're in a small library, and I grew up in a sort of rural library, this is what allows you to get books from bigger institutions. And sometimes that might take a little bit. And I think I've only ever had like two requests not be able to be filled because I was asking for some really detailed out there stuff.
Yeah.
But eventually it comes. And so this is how rural libraries are affected. But the IMLS also gives out specific grant funding to different institutions. And keep in mind, it's for library science and for museums. Mm-hmm. So last year, the IMLS distributed a good chunk of money to a good number of kind of programs in Wisconsin. So the Ho-Chunk got $142,000. The Oneida Nation got $86,000. I have other numbers here. The Wisconsin Historical Society got $177,000. The Door County Historical Society got $20,000.
And I saw a comment come in the live stream from Jenny. Says, I support and look to libraries as a steward of history at learning and free thinking. The rare books room at the MPL Central in downtown Milwaukee, and free events to learn new professional skills via workshops. And here's what really kicks me in the teeth and makes me feel like sick about it, and it's something you just mentioned too. Also, local libraries are often the only source of free internet and computer services that many communities, especially rural ones, have access to. And that's something that we seem to always come back to, is these cuts that are coming from the federal government are going to hurt the rural areas a lot. You know, we're talking about hospital closures, talk about libraries. So that's something to always keep in mind. So I appreciate you bringing that to light, especially your experience about growing up in libraries. Essentially, that's very, very wonderful. And thank you for the information on that as well.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. And now the federal government has reached day 23 of the federal government shutdown. ABC's Perry Russum in Washington.
With no progress in negotiations on Capitol Hill, Democratic Senator John Fetterman is breaking with his party in hopes of reopening the government. He says Republicans should invoke what's called the nuclear option. It would allow the government spending bill to pass the Senate by simple majority instead of a 60-vote threshold, warning federal food assistance or SNAP benefits are about to run out for 42 million Americans.
The destruction of the White House continues. Sources tell ABC News the demolition of the entire East Wing could be complete by this weekend. President Trump now also upping the cost of his new ballroom. It's gone from $200 million to $300 million, which he says will be paid for by private donors. While defending airstrikes on vessels off the coast of Venezuela, Secretary of State Marco Rubio is now headed to Israel to discuss the ceasefire in Gaza. This is ABC News.
Will Watson return? Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NFL. Packers wide receiver Christian Watson has been rehabbing after suffering a torn ACL at the end of last season. Will this be the week Watson returns?
My goal and my plan is to play this week. I'd say I could have played last week too, to be honest, but you know, obviously just got to make sure, you know, I'm hearing, you know, everybody's opinions on everything and just being as smart as possible about it.
The Packers play the Steelers in Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football. NBA, the Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo scored 37 points, the most in his career on an opening night, in a 133-120 victory over the Washington Wizards. But guard Kevin Porter Jr. undergoing an MRI for a severely sprained left ankle. How is he doing early in the game?
Just his defensive pressure. Couple steals, deflections, and then just his half-court defense, him and our whole group, led to us a ton of runouts. It might have been the most advanced passes we've had.
That's the Bucks head coach, Doc Rivers, with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a law review, joining us. Going to talk to the Milwaukee Public Museum about special things for Halloween and all things sports with Paul Noonan.
Mattenair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A lawyer who had multiple phone calls with President Donald Trump during the January 6th insurrection.
It is going to be mostly cloudy today with a shower or two possible. Our high right around 44 this afternoon. The wind will be northwest at 5 to 10. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy. We're going to drop into the mid-20s for a low. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 50. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 35.
We want to help you promote your community event for free. Tell us about your nonprofit group or organization's upcoming event, and we'll help you promote it on The Buzz of the North. Email us the information or a copy of the flyer to community@whsm.com. That's community@whsm.com. You can also drop off your flyer at our office on East 3rd Street in Hayward, or mail it to 16880 W, Highway 63, Hayward, 54843. Hometown Radio Refreshed on 96.9 WBZH.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation just announced the official start date for one of its biggest ever construction projects, the I-94 East-West Project, which will reconstruct and widen a 3.5-mile stretch of interstate highway in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. This is a massive project with an estimated cost of more than $1.7 billion. And with this official start date announced also came estimates for how long this will take. Construction is expected to last until 2033. At the recombobulation area.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent interview with State Senator Jody Hebbish-Sinkin on the Maggie Dawn Show.
I introduced the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Reauthorization Bill, which we've been working on for months, building community with stakeholders, with organizations around the state, and other legislators across the aisle. Because it is a program that is singularly popular in Wisconsin. It has a recent statewide poll has it as over 90% favorable, which in these days and times is, I can't think of anything that's comparable to that level of popularity. And unfortunately, it did not get funded in the budget that passed this early July. So it was something that we really wanted to make sure would move forward. And we introduced a bill because the Republican bill that was introduced, while in good faith, has a particular oversight mechanism, which would make the program impractical and not be able to serve its function.
What's this obstacle that you spoke of, this oversight mechanism that you believe makes the Republican funding bill of the Knowles Nelson program untenable?
Essentially, the Republican bill that was introduced, again, with good intention, because remember, not one single Republican voted to reauthorize the program during the budget process. So these two Republicans, Representative Kurtz and Senator Teston, introduced a bill to try to also save the program. But what it includes is an oversight mechanism, just a fancy word for how land acquisitions will be reviewed that would be fundamentally impractical or not workable. It would require certain land acquisitions to go through the entirety of the legislative process, through the Assembly, through the Senate, all its committees and working groups, and ultimately the governor. Sometimes that could take up to a year and a half, 2 years, or get tied up and never happen.
And
that oversight mechanism is what we have worked on in our bill to replace with something that is transparent and accountable. It would be with a Knowles-Nelson stewardship board that would include representatives from both parties, from both the Senate, the Assembly, the DNR, the Natural Resources, Conservation Organization, the tribes, just a wonderful mix of citizens. That is really what this type of oversight should be all about anyway, something that's open, transparent, that the public can watch carefully.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Markets are in the black as we get trading on a Thursday morning. Some of it may be that the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Farm Service Agency offices are slated to reopen today, despite the fact that the government's still shut down. Word is their goal is to distribute about $3 billion in aid going to U.S. farmers. We're not going it alone on this one. I've got Cody Koster, dairy analyst with EverAg, joining us live this morning. I'll pick his brain, find out what he knows about this possible office opening, so stick around for that. This weather improving today, sunshine on the way, but that overnight low is what worries Wisconsin potato producers. They've got spuds in the ground still, and if they get frozen, that's a bad thing for you and I. We're going to find out about that. And Ben Jarbo on the way with the story of one Wisconsin beef producer way up in Ladysmith that says he's disturbed about Argentinian beef being allowed into the U.S. marketplace. Why? Well, he says take a look at consumer demand, consumer purchases of beef. It remains robust. Brady Zook sharing that opinion with us as our morning unfolds. The morning of October 23rd. What can I tell you? A couple different things that caught my attention today. First of all, did you know on this day back in 1921, Green Bay Packers played their first NFL game? They defeated the Minneapolis Marines 7-6. 6,000 people in the stands. It was the inaugural season. 3 wins, 2 losses, 2 ties. That was on this day back in 1921. Happy birthday today, Weird Al Yankovic. 66 years young today. Actor Ryan Reynolds is 49. And sports football quarterback Doug Flutie, he turned 63 today. And now you know. Well, we want you to know that Wisconsin beef producers are not happy at the idea of introducing Argentinian beef into the United States marketplace to hopefully bring down consumer prices. Ben Jarbo's got more.
On Thursday, October 16th, President Trump let it slip that the U.S. will be buying Argentine beef to lower prices for consumers. On the other side, the domestic beef industry had a knee-jerk reaction to the news, causing some stir. I'm Ben Jarbo at the Midwest Farm Report, and here to give the producer side of the story is Brady Zook. He is a producer out of Ladysmith, Wisconsin, and former president of the Wisconsin Cattlemen's Association. He says this announcement has come at the high end of the 10-year cycle that is seen in the beef industry.
We're enjoying good times in the cattle market today, right? What really concerns me, you know, is the outside, manipulation, you could say, of the cattle market, right? Cattle market's based on free trade principles, supply and demand, and any kind of outside intervention really wreaks havoc in our markets. And is frustrating, right, when we're enjoying good times and making a profit for our families.
And I don't know if you've talked to any farms, because this also does affect kind of the dairy industry, because some of those farmers are doing more of that beef on dairy, and they switch just because of the prices. Have you talked to anyone that has been affected in that way or is worried because they did that?
Absolutely. So you look at the dairy industry today, right? There's the beef on dairy calves that are marketed in the beef supply chain, and also cull dairy cows, you know, that play a significant role in the beef supply chain. And you look at the cattle business overall, beef and dairy producers both play there. And the revenue from those cull cow sales and, you know, the beef cross calves is pretty significant to the dairy industry today. You do look at, Ben, you know, from the import standpoint, trade's very important for our cattle business today, both imports and exports, right? We export high-quality cuts like ribeyes to overseas markets, and we also export products that we don't consume here in the United States, for example, stomachs are often sent to Mexico, which they're considered a delicacy there. So, and on the backside, we import lean trim because the American consumer enjoys their burgers. And with today's shortage of cows going to market and our, you know, heavy fed supply, we need that lean grinding trim to make the burger to meet the demand. So trade is definitely a good thing here, as long as it's free trade, right, and market-based, not dictated by the government.
Zook also says that currently Argentina only makes up for 2.1% of our beef imports. And since they use 75% of their domestic beef, that even if we do see an increase of Argentina imports, it really won't be that much. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
Okay, it's time for our fan field goal kick of the game. Hey, he's wearing a Pioneer brand PowerCore Enlist Corn t-shirt. Of course, Pioneer brand PowerCore Enlist Corn beats the competition's yields by 7.7 bushels an acre. All right, here's the kick. It's good! Not bad for a guy in work boots.
Plant the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/powerup.
I'll tell you what, the old world flavors and recipes just keep folks coming back at Bavaria Sausage, and they're sharing the story beyond Wisconsin's borders. Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke encouraging you to check out Bavaria Sausage's newly revised website. Talk about ease of shopping all in one place. Go to BavariaSausage.com. All those flavors you're looking for in the Landjagers, the Brats, the Summer Sausage, all right there. Plus, great gift boxes with that Wisconsin flair. And if you're looking for the German accent of the holidays, of course, BavariaSausage.com has it. If you're a little bit rushed with a hectic life, Bavaria Sausage understands that as well. Take a look at their in-store restaurant quality individual packaged meats, from chicken wings and breasts right on through to pork chops, tenderloins, and burger patties. It's just part of what Bavaria Sausage does and does well. Check it out online now, BavariaSausage.com.
At CHS, we know what it takes to feed and fuel the world, to integrate a global ag and energy supply chain, to advocate for farmers in their fields and around the world, to build communities, invest in rural America, and empower rural economies. It takes courage, conviction, commitment. It takes the nation's leading farmer-owned cooperative. It takes a co-op. It takes CHS.
I'm glad to report that we've got sunshine in the forecast for today. Temperatures hopefully into the 50s, but it's not the daytime temperatures that worry our Wisconsin potato producers. It's those overnight lows. One of them, Ryan Walder, is the farm manager for Alsum Produce, one of our large potato growers in the state, and he says those overnight lows and risking potential freeze of potatoes that remain in the ground, that's what keeps him up nights.
You know, there is some frost freeze risk here. I know it was, I think, right around 32, 33 this morning here, and looks like we have a few more nights of that. So this heat has pushed us now into where we're late enough that it's extremely uncomfortable that a freeze could come in and freeze the potatoes in the ground. So they will rot if they freeze, and they'll have blemishes. They're pretty much unmarketable. So, and again, if you do put some frozen ones in with good potatoes, you run a very heavy risk of having rot in your storage bins.
Ryan Walder, he's a farm manager for Alsum Produce. He said right now they can't be in control of the weather, and unfortunately, they're not in control of the prices either. They've seen their potato prices slide over the past few weeks because of an abundant crop and some slow consumer demand. What's happening as far as demand in the marketplace in overnight electronic trade? Like I said, we're trading firm. That's good news. We've got December corn currently up a penny at 424. March corn's up a penny at 437. November soybeans are up 3, 1038. January beans up 4.5, 1054. The wheat for July up a penny, 542. Barrel cheese yesterday was down to it, 175.5. 40-pound block cheese was down 2.5 at 174. Double A butter dropped 3.5 cents yesterday to 154.5 per pound. The November class 3 milk that goes into cheese this morning right now, 11 cents stronger, 1752. December's up to 1652. What does he know about FSA offices potentially reopening today to start distributing some $3 billion worth of federal aid. Is that influencing our markets? Cody Koster, dairy analyst with EverEgg, joins us next.
Can't get enough farm news? The stories you hear and more 24/7 at MidwestFarmReport.com. Stay tuned as we'll be right back.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
We want to help you promote your community event for free. Tell us about your nonprofit group or organization's upcoming event, and we'll help you promote it on The Buzz of the North. Email us the information or a copy of the flyer to community@whsm.com. That's community@whsm.com. You can also drop off your flyer at our office on East 3rd Street in Hayward, or mail it to 16880 W, Highway 63, Hayward, 54843. Hometown Radio Refreshed on 96.9 WBZH.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Jason Mansmith from Green Lake's Thrasher Theater makes the popcorn pick of the week. Then Chris Rogowski from Chicken or the Egg Photography makes an in-studio visit. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You say is going to be initially a $3 billion assistance package. Joining us this morning to talk about that and many other things, Cody Koster. He's one of the dairy analysts that we lean on with our friends from EverEgg. I'll remind you about their website if you want to see their entire team, ever.egg. Cody, good to catch up with you again. Let's start there. That was fresh news late yesterday afternoon from U.S. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins that they're going to start to bring people back into the office. Sounds like initially it's only going to be two people per office, though. So that could be quite a lot of work for two people to try to execute, you know?
Yeah. It sounds like they're going to get going this morning, Pam, or sometime today, reopen these FSA offices on Thursday and get some farmers paid out for this $3 billion bill that you were kind of alluding to there. But as you had made mention, they got to figure out who's going to be going in there. I'm assuming it's going to go by seniority. They'll be able to kind of staff themselves depending on how long they've been there. And let's see how long it kind of takes everybody to get up and running with this program to be able to get producers into the FSA office to get everything kind of signed and dotted, I guess.
Are you getting any initial feedback from the marketplace this morning, Cody?
Right now, we got grains are a little bit higher. Milk opened up just slightly higher on the open last night. I think maybe in part to some of this news, we're kind of getting a little bit of traction. It's not a full government open up, but hey, at least we've broken loose a little bit and we've gotten a few folks back to work. And this is definitely going to help producers going forward. So I think it's definitely giving the market a little bit of wind here.
Well, and it's if they're back in the office, it also would lend us to believe that we might see more payments that were routinely expected, mortgage payments, things like that, a little bit more business as usual for an office of USDA that is, you know, it is kind of one of the regular workhorses that we see farmers on a day-to-day basis touching base with.
Yeah, it's a big part of what farmers lean on in the country is the FSA offices. And I've had a lot of calls ever since the beginning of October of, hey, oh, man, I forgot we can't go into the FSA office now that it shut down to get signed up for some of these programs or get some of the monies back that we are due. What do we do? And I'm like, hey, you got to kind of wait until they make an announcement for when it's opened up. And then you can jump in and go see everybody that's in the office at that time.
Yeah, because despite the fact that a lot of this these programs are online, you know what I mean? You can have access online. You're only part of the equation.
Right, right, exactly. And a lot of these, to get signed up, to do it online yourself is very tedious and very demanding. And having that in-person interaction is always such a help to producers when they're looking to get some of these signed up programs.
All right. So it's a developing story, one that we're paying attention to. Again, we're so glad that we'll be joined this morning by Cody Koster. He's one of the dairy analysts keeping an eye on things with EverAg. Again, just remind you, their website, ever.ag. Let's pivot a little bit, Cody, because the dairy industry has been in flux without some of those federal government reports that we routinely lean on. World Ag Supply Demand Report. We lost October, may lose November. The September milk production report, we didn't get in October. What information are you still able to garnish, Cody? Where are you keeping your eye trained?
Yeah, I guess right now, like the big things, we were supposed to get milk production report yesterday, and because the government's not open, we're not going to get that one. But we've been leaning heavily on global dairy trade that we just had Tuesday from overseas. Obviously, that's not going to be shut down. Their mozzarella price dropped to $1.47. And interestingly enough, their butter price is at $3.02. And people are going to say, well, we're such a discount in the world to butter. On that front, we are. But if we turn our head to cheese, usually rule of thumb is you need to be 20 cents lesser than your competition to get exports out. And at $1.47 overseas, we are sitting at $1.74 block today. That is not moving many exports. So that is definitely something that we have kept a very close eye on for the past couple of auctions for the global dairy trade of, hey, what are their prices doing compared to what our prices are doing? And it kind of gives us a little bit more of an insight of to why we've seen such this steady slide on both butter, cheese, and whole milk powder.
And here we sit at the end of October, Cody. Holiday demand, I mean, is it out there? Obviously, that's the big question. And is the lack of information, of tactile reporting on sales domestically, et cetera, kind of messing up our minds when it comes to the direction on holiday purchases?
I think there is still a little bit of holiday demand right ahead of us. We've been told recently there's a few companies that are kind of hand to mouth on spot because, you know, 3 months ago, everyone was talking about how far we were going to slip in cheese going towards $1.50, and we never quite got there. And I think there was a lot of companies that were sitting back waiting to get down to $1.50 and then buying at that price. And when we never got there, as we get closer to the holidays, they're like, well, we're kind of a little bit low on inventory. We should probably get something bought in right now. So I think there is a little bit of demand ahead of us. Not much. We have to remember there is a time frame where we have to get it bought, shipped, wrapped, and sold before the holidays. And I think that timeline is fastly approaching as we kind of slide into the end of October, starting next week.
What about inventory? What about on hand? Do we get those reports? Is this all just a shot in the dark? What's happening there?
Right now, it is a shot in the dark. I mean, until the USDA reopens up, until the government gets back to work, we are not going to know those numbers right away. People are making guesstimations, and people have been tracking it for long enough where they can kind of make an educated guess. But to say that we know what we actually have out there in inventory, I don't think there's anyone that actually knows, because there is no reporting at this time. And to my knowledge, there is no like light at the end of the tunnel, if we will, for when the government opens back up and when we're going to know this. We could be talking about this at Thanksgiving and still be shut down.
Cody Koster joining us live here on the Midwest Farm Report. If you want to see him and the team or connect with them and all the services they've got, ever.ag. All right, that being said then, Cody, what else are you keeping an eye on? Like, there's so much of this information flow that we are not in control of and are caught in the middle of. What else are you kind of keeping an eye on? What should dairy farmers know you're keeping an eye on?
I think right now we're keeping an eye on prices into 2026. You know, I mentioned global dairy trade coming down. It wasn't 6 months ago where everyone was saying how high their prices were and ours needed to go match theirs. And this just proves that a lot of the times our price does not need to go higher to match the rest of the world. Theirs can come down to match ours. And as the price falls with all the tariffs that we have on throughout the world, we need to be mindful of prices. If there are prices out there that work for your business that make a great break even in 2026, I would suggest getting them hedged up right now, because I do believe that we are going to have a harder fall a lot faster once we get closer to the holiday demand being over. Like by the time we get to December, this milk market could get pretty ugly, folks.
Well, and we are still starting to feel the effects of changes to the federal milk marketing order that happened in June.
Yes, we are. I mean, now that people are finally getting some of the milk checks, that those are going to affect and seeing the ramifications, the deductions on that side, it just lends another reason of why we need to be watching these prices going farther out, because when those prices change and it generically took away some money from the pockets of the dairy producers, That's why we need to be mindful going forward and watching these prices carefully.
Appreciate it, Cody. Cody Koster joining us live on the Midwest Farm Report.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Drivers, Austin Cindric here. As a NASCAR Cup Series driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford Mustang, there's a few rules of the road I like to tell my family and friends. Tire pressure is critical to safety because underinflated tires are more likely to fail. Plus, properly inflated tires will give you better gas mileage. Make sure to check your tire pressure at least once a month or stop by a local tire retailer for an air check.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
Invisible pests that steals from your soybean crop. Next on Farm to Fork. As you've probably heard by now, the 12 agricultural safety and health centers around the country did receive a renewal of their federal funding support and will not be shutting down. Many of those centers had projects in progress, and those will now be able to continue. Also continuing the Ag Safety and Health Campaign on Farm to Fork. To learn how you can assist with that, visit the homepage at NorthShoreProductions.com. A drive down a country road can be fun, but that fun can end in a hurry if you're not vigilant for slow-moving farm equipment on that roadway. Farm machinery using public roads are supposed to have signage and lights to warn motorists, but don't assume it'll be there. Farm safety and health is everyone's business. This reminder is brought to you by Farm to Fork, through the generous support of listeners like you across the country. Learn how you can help at NorthShoreProductions.com. Your soybean cyst nematode management guide is worthless at this point. Horacio Lopez-Nicora, a soybean pathologist at The Ohio State University, says even resistant soybean varieties aren't that resistant anymore. And he adds a lot of soybean growers seem to be in denial.
I'm growing 80 bushels an acre beans. I don't have a problem. Well, add 30% to that, and you will have extra income to your operation, right? So not because you are producing above the average doesn't mean that you are not losing due to soybean cyst nematode, and that you can actually compensate for that by an integrated management approach.
Lopez-Nicora says some resistant varieties are still fairly effective. So is not planting soybeans, he adds.
Well, I have soybean cyst nematode, and corn is not a host. I'll just plant continuous corn and get rid of it.
Lopez-Nicora says you may need help assessing the extent of an SCN problem, and you can check with your local extension office for help on that.
Keep low levels low. That's the best approach. You will not get rid of it. So let's keep it low.
Lopez-Nicora was a guest on the Field Advisor podcast, a production of the Illinois Soybean Association. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. The midterm elections might be a year away, but there is a sleeper issue out there that may be the key to Democrats winning. We'll discuss it next time. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Businesses across the state counting on $1.5 billion in federal funding are finding out it's not coming.
The money had been approved to help pay for energy-saving projects, solar and wind development, technology innovation, and more. The Department of Energy is now reportedly canceling those awards. One group that is getting a boost in federal funding, AI data center developers. The new federal budget lets tech companies claim more upfront tax breaks on data center equipment, facilities, and production lines, and it appears to be working. Microsoft recently announced what it calls the world's most powerful AI data center planned for Mount Pleasant. But environmental groups warn unfettered AI development could cause lasting harm to our natural resources. Knowledge is power for a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues. Check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The White House East Wing is expected to be completely gone, possibly by this weekend. The demolition to make way for President Trump's now $300 million ballroom. ABC's Mary Bruce.
The National Trust for Historic Preservation is urging the administration to hit the pause button to pause demolition until the proposed ballroom can go through the required public review processes. And they say they're deeply concerned that this gigantic ballroom will be larger than the iconic residence, and that will overwhelm, you know, the architecture of the White House itself.
Furloughed government workers, meantime, going nearly 3 weeks without a paycheck on this day 23 of the federal government shutdown. Misty didn't just perform ballet, she changed and defined who belongs. Those are the words of Oprah Winfrey at last night's celebration of Misty Copeland, who became the first black female principal dancer at the American Ballet Theater a decade ago and is now retiring. She took one last spin at Lincoln Center in New York last night. This is ABC News.